might never make it out.
You have tuned in to Open Mic on CJSF Radio, broadcasting on 90.1 FM from Burnaby Mountain, BC.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Open Mic. I'm your host, Varian. And if you're unfamiliar with these hours on radio, it's the next hour where I'll be playing you a bit of variety as well as doing a little bit of talk radio, talking about what's going on and what's important and what's pertinent to me right now, as well as playing you guys some great music that I've found from the CJSF archive this week. But on the outset of our programming today, I'd like to acknowledge that CJSF broadcasts atop Burnaby Mountain on the unceded ancestral territories of the Kwitlam, Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. What's going on with you guys? It's like winding down for me, really. Like, it's really the end of the term now, so everything's kind of wrapping up. It's kind of feeling like I kind of like this end of term, particularly like just before the holidays. It definitely feels like the most excited I feel about like the break, and you know, definitely SFU does a good job of like, I mean, you know, they cut our reading breaks here, but because of that, like, my school's over, like, you know, by the end of next week, which is, like, a week earlier. So I'm going to have a lot of time to sort of just, like, lay out and just sort of do what I need to do. And I'm excited for that. And, you know, went to go see, you know, my grad counselor. And it's looking good for me. Like, last three courses next semester, kind of already know who I've been, who I'm going to take classes with and who's going to be in my class, which is really cool. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, and you know, I feel like it's been a long road of me in this university experience. I almost like never really thought I would get here, you know, like really felt like university was dragging on a long time for me, and it was, you know, especially during, you know, the COVID and during the quarantine rather, it was like pretty difficult for me to stay motivated in school. I was pretty sure I was gonna not finish at that point, like those 2 years in, but you know, took some time off, and you know, here I am, and you know, I think a lot's changed for me. Like, radio has stayed a constant throughout, though, but you know, definitely like found my space here, and like found my friends here, like for the first time ever, which is like not even a big deal, but you know, we had our last wrap up class with my urban policy class, and there was 8 of us. We all like, you know, we all went up to Beercraft up in the university village up there, and all had a drink together, watched the third period of the hockey game. Felt like a real, you know, like, felt like the university experience that I, like, always envisioned, you know, but never really had the basis or community to go for. And it's not like, you know, it's not like I don't go out with people, like, coworkers and stuff, but there's something nice about after a class, and everybody's like adults now, you know, it's not just like going out with your friends after high school or going out with your coworkers who already work at a bar with you, you know, like it was just like, you know, oh, does anyone want to get a drink at Beercraft, you know, it felt very like, what's the word I'm looking for? It felt very like put together almost, you know, and, you know, I had my girlfriend there too, who like also goes to the school, you know, I felt like the real, like, you know, grown-up university experience that I always envisioned for myself, maybe in like the first year. So like that was really funny, but you know, very happy to be on my way out and, you know, on to different things, you know, like I think things are like opening up for me, and it's like looking at what kind of projects I can do to fill out my portfolio, you know, graduation wise already. I'm already thinking about like, you know, what I'm gonna do after grad too. Like, me and my siblings have decided to go on another Asia trip for me, but, you know, first time for them. It's, like, my grad as well as my youngest brother's graduation, who's, like, finishing high school. So, you know, I think this is, like, a good point for me right now where things in school feel good for once. Like, feels like a term that things have been, you know, steady, and like I've been on top of things and excited to be at school. not only that, but like to like go into the next term as my sort of senior year, it feels really, really good. So I'm very, very happy about that. And anyways, radio's always been here for me. So, you know, happy to still be doing this show after all these years. And, you know, it's a great space. Like, you know, it's important to have these third spaces. And so I'm very, 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 very lucky. Just reflecting on that. Anyways, let's get to some music here. I've got a song by Talking Violet. It's like a cool, you know, CanCon and FemCon, like almost kind of dreamlike, you know, rock music kind of band. Pretty cool, pretty cool stuff. So here's Menagerie Queen on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Thank you. This is Bird Note. Author Ray Youngbear has a special bond with a red-winged blackbird in his backyard on the Meskwaki Nation's land in Iowa.
The red-winged blackbird is very friendly, and it's the first time that's ever happened in my life. I've asked it in Meskwaki, Gewishaban, Nawad Shabuchigan, I've got some food here, please wait, and the bird will listen, and then, you know, I'll just get the bird feed, and he takes it, and off it goes, and that's the first time in my life in 71 years that a bird has approached me that close.
But it's not the first time he's had interactions with these birds. Many years ago, when he was training his singing voice, Ray Youngbear took a kind of vocal lesson from the blackbirds.
In order to hone my skills with music, I'm a singer of native songs, and I'd go out into the field way out of nowhere and scream my lungs out, my throat out, and oftentimes the birds that I would hear in the woods were the red wings, and I would listen to them and try to imitate their singing. They have the most complicated song in the world, high pitches and low notes, and then it smooths out and it kicks up again. And I used red-winged blackbirds in my self-training of music, and they were instrumental in developing my voice to where it is today.
Learn more about Ray Youngbear's music and writing on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Ariana Rummel.
And welcome back. That last song before the break right there was a Smush song. I can't remember the name of it. Wait, I just played it. Ooh, If We Didn't Cry, it's called, here on CGSF 90.1 FM. So this past week, in my urban policy class, we've been talking a lot about Chinatowns. We had recently Lauren Hom, a professor of that stuff. I can't remember what school she was teaching at, but she came and gave a talk, and also because we had studied her book about LA Chinatowns, and pretty relevant to like the final project I'm doing for that class too. And so, anyways, we were talking a little bit about that. I made like a little presentation yesterday about that too. Thought I'd share a little bit, but it's mostly centered around the 105 Kiefer development in Chinatown, which we've spent the last term sort of researching and pulling things from, and how, just for some context, the 105 Kiefer development is this proposed 9-story like mixed use, residential building / whatever street level store building that's been proposed for the vacant parking lot that's just beside the Chinese Memorial Plaza, that is like the one on Kiefer Street that is, you know, Memorial Plaza to commemorate all those Chinese Canadians who came over to, you know, build the Pacific Railway and lost their lives, as well as veterans in World War II who like came back from war even and like still had to come back and fight for their right to vote. So that development's a big point of contention in the community because, you know, as you know, Chinatown is home to a lot of like low income housing. A lot of Chinese seniors live there for whatever reason, you know, whether that be like families living there dating back to times Pacific Railway, and, you know, just maybe like also the fact that it's like, you know, near town and, you know, it's affordable. And so there's a lot of Chinese seniors that have been living there for years and years and years now, who are being slowly, you know, priced out as of late as Chinatown kind of becomes more upscaled. We've seen that with the other building on Kiefer, I can't remember the name of it, but a big, you know, 12-story or so, like, development that's, like, a bit of a high-rise that kind of, like, towers over the sort of landscape of Chinatown, which is, you know, smaller, like, two-story buildings, you know, that kind of, you know, exist around this, you know, kind of on the street level, you know, and just about like that sort of not, you know, two things. One is like a lack of affordable housing in the 105 Kiefer development, as well as like it really not fitting into, you know, the culture and, you know, the people who are there and whatnot. For example, like the other high rise that is there in Chinatown, I've noticed this, but has like red lettering and the font is made to look kind of almost Asian. Like it's very like the way they've designed the font is kind of like it's articulated in such a way that it almost looks like it's trying to resemble Chinese characters, even though it's like, you know, English. And so one of Kiefer is also one of those elements that, you know, is severely lacking in, affordable housing for these seniors. And, you know, the worry is that, like, these seniors won't have anywhere to go. I mean, it's been a big point of contention there. And, you know, I think there's, like, a lot of, Chinatowns and even, you know, talking back to, like, Lauren Hom's book, the woman who came and gave a talk in her class, like, you know, Chinatowns kind of are lumped in with these, like, notions of, like, being slum-like and being kind of underutilized. I mean, you know, I think that kind of dates back to sort of, like, racial relations, you know, and, you know, the Chinese coming in and having to pay head tax and sort of being sort of consolidated into these, like, this, like, racial enclave, which is, like, Chinatowns, you know. So anyway, this 105 Kiefer development in 2017 was heavily rallied against. It was one of, like, the few developments, actually, to be, rejected by the Vancouver Permit Board. I think, you know, they made a pretty big, you know, stink about it, about where Chinatown stands on that. Specifically, like, I think the agency of the residents was, like, a really big thing. Like, a lot of these seniors really rallied together to attend these public hearings and to stand their ground on, like, this is not what the community needs. And it was very fascinating because, like, a lot of them, don't speak English. So, you know, all English speaking hearing is, like, already a pretty difficult, like, bar to entry for all these seniors, yet they still, like, you know, realize that this is, like, a point of, like, no return here. Like, they really had to fight for this. And so there was, like, over, like, 50 or maybe even 100, like, speakers or so, like, and a lot of these, like, you know, senior Chinese speakers, you know, who had signed up to speak and give their point to the permit board, a lot of them had to, like, you know, articulate their thoughts through, like, translators, translating in Mandarin and, you know, Cantonese and whatnot. And so it was a big win for them in 2017. But since then, around, you know, maybe it was, like, just last year, 105 Kiefer has kind of, well, it has been approved and is under construction now. And basically what happened was, BD Living escalated this case to the Supreme Court of British Columbia, and they deemed that there was not enough grounds for them to reject it, and the permit board had to give them another chance to resubmit their application. And so what's interesting, though, is, you know, I think it's evident that, like, the community really, like, stood their ground and really made their voice heard. The community was kind of circumvented in this reapplication process. Some things that BD Living did was, you know, first and foremost, they switched out their architect. They originally had this architecture firm called Merrick Architecture, and they switched out for Chinese Canadian architect named James Cheng, which I think is, like, a super interesting thing, because the sort of the rhetoric about that has been that James Cheng is going to be, like, a good fit. He's, like, a member of the community. I can't remember the exact quotations off the top of my head, but I'm reading an interview through a magazine talking about how, you know, he sat in a couple board meetings and they immediately knew he'd be, like, a perfect fit for this, you know? And, you know, I think while that may be true, and, you know, I don't deny that he doesn't have some space in the community, although that being probably, like, members of the community that are a little bit more, whatchamacallit, like, development, like, are, like, more willing to prioritize economic development over, you know, sort of the needs of sort of grassroots communities like that. So I mean, that was like also a big thing too, and you know, a lot of things we talked about in this book comparing LA's Chinatown as well, is that like, you know, these sort of who is the main stakeholder and who is like, who almost is the voice for the community in Chinatowns, you know, and it can be very splintered sometimes, where some organizations are very like, you know, development oriented, and some are like more about like sort of the intangible sort of sentimental value of the community, people who are kind of like looking out more for like residents and like more looking out for you know, workers in the area. I don't really know much about this Chinese architect James Cheng. Like, I don't know if he actually really did grow